You're listening to a 95BFM podcast. Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
As per usual, our regular segment with Andrew Little is back. I will pass it over to Tuva'a, who spoke to the Health Minister earlier.
So this morning you've just finished up the third reading of the Maniapoto Deed of Settlement Bill, where you had Maniapoto whānau travel to Parliament to witness it. How did it all go this morning? What were some of the highlights?
We had an amazing reception at the Pipitea Marae down in Thorn and Key in Wellington before we started the third reading. And that was the opportunity to, first of all, to welcome Maniapoto whānau, but they have given the Crown and Parliament one of their very important taonga, Maungorongo, which is a taiaha, which was around in the 1800s. It was a taiaha that was used to sort of promote and defend the aukati, which was the kind of protection they put around their area as the Crown was buying up land and what have you. So they've given us Maungorongo to look after for 5 years, it'll sit in Parliament for 5 years. That was really symbolic. It was a symbol of the trust that yet again Maniapoto was putting into the Crown and Parliament as the start of the kind of the new relationship based on reconciliation and achieving peace between us. So that was very powerful. Just so many Maniapoto here, and a lot of them came down by train. And the significance of that is that one of the things that the Crown did badly was when they were negotiating to get land for the main trunk railway, they sort of bought more land than was needed and then sold that off to private landowners. But the main trunk railway line is, Maniapoto feels very connected with that because of the importance that that plays in the life of the nation. So many came down on a specially chartered train to Wellington to be part of the third reading experience. So, a lot of special things have been happening.
Could you give us some detail on what the settlement entails for the Maniapoto whānau?
Yeah, so the financial redress is about $165 million. So that gives them the ability to purchase back commercial lands and commercial properties that they want. There's also the return of some conservation land, and then a lot of renaming of sites. One of the important things is the statement of apology that gets delivered, and the Prime Minister is going to deliver the apology to Maniapoto in December. And that is kind of a major act of reconciliation on the part of the Crown. So this has been, it's been a long time in the making. I think the process started more than 30 years ago for Maniapoto, and we've got to this point. But this is one of the more significant treaty settlements that the Crown has done.
So recently you were in the United Kingdom to pay your respects to the recently passed away Queen. How was the trip? What was the general feeling in the air while you were there?
Yeah, I mean, the purpose of the trip was actually I had a range of meetings set up in relation to my security and intelligence sort of portfolio responsibilities, and while I was travelling, the Queen sadly died, and I got to London. And I got to London, and it was an interesting atmosphere. It was, a lot of people expressing and feeling a great sense of loss. But because of the time Queen Elizabeth had spent on the throne as our Queen, 70 years or more than 70 years, I think there was also a sense that it was never going to last, and there was a sense of thanksgiving, I think, is what I really felt. People really wanted to express their appreciation for what she represented, which, in our kind of style of constitutional setup, the monarch ends up being this sort of figure of continuity and constancy, and she definitely did that. I mean, putting aside questions of what should our constitutional arrangements be in the 21st century? The reality is, she has been our monarch and this figurehead and this very important symbol. And she acquitted herself, pretty remarkably during that time and was what you would expect a monarch to be in this day and age.
Now that she has passed away, this does bring up a few questions about whether or not New Zealand should become a republic. A big concern for some people surrounding if New Zealand became a republic was the implications it would have on the Treaty of Waitangi. Let's say hypothetically, even though it's extremely unlikely, if New Zealand were to become a republic under this government, what would be some of the considerations you as the Treaty Negotiations Minister would need to consider to ensure that the treaty doesn't become void under a new republic?
Yeah, I think that would be one of the more challenging questions. And I don't think, I think there will be debate about our constitutional arrangements, whether we want to continue to have a monarch as our head of state. And if there were to be an appetite for change, I think it's very important for Māori and Māori leaders to then be engaged in how do we ensure that the obligations signed up to under Te Tiriti are continued, and that those obligations remain on the government of the day, on whatever the head of state, whatever form that might take. And I think that's, for a lot of Māori, that is critical. The Treaty of Waitangi is an essential document. It was the consent that allowed the government to establish here, and it carried with it obligations, and it's important that they be continued, and if there's to be some new arrangement, somehow replicated with no loss of significance or importance to that. I think that's just going to be a discussion that we have to have. I think, as there is in the Pākehā community, there are mixed views amongst Māori about what should or shouldn't happen. I just think that's a debate we're going to have, but central to it will be how we preserve and protect the mana of the treaty.
That was Tuvaa speaking with Andrew Little.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.